Good morning. It's time for In the Green Outdoors with Gail Martin and Carol Kelly. Each week, the ladies will bring you gardening and planting ideas, tell you about native Ohio plants, prairies and habitats, and great tips for everything in the green outdoors. This week with Carol Kelly.
Hello again, everyone. I expect other vegetable gardeners who are listening have been as frustrated as I by the cool weather following closely on the heels of frequent rains, not to mention that really strong wind we had a week or so ago. I cobbled together windbreaks to protect my tender eggplant, pepper, tomato, and other such plants that I finally had been able to get into the soil. Using wooden stakes, some old window screens, plastic sheeting, and lots of colorful plastic clamps, I was able to keep most of my seedlings safe. The potato plants are quite sturdy, so they were fine. Lettuce hugs the ground yet, and the peas, while they seem to be very slow growing this year, had twined around the tree brush that I use as supports. The only casualties so far were two young bean plants. They snapped off. Fortunately, beans are a pretty fast-growing crop, so I have plenty of time for two or even three more plantings, which I generally do anyway over the summer. One good thing to be said about the damp soil is that weeds are easily pulled. Many winter annuals that I talked about a couple of months ago mostly have matured and gone to seed, if left to grow, so I hope listeners found time to remove them before that happened. But our vigil has just begun, for now that the daytime temperatures at least have warmed the soil, I am seeing thousands of seedlings of weeds whose seeds require warmer soil temperatures for germination. I took a walk through the yard between downpours earlier this past week and made a short list of self-sowing, old-fashioned annual flowers whose seeds are quite tolerant of our winters and that I welcome back each year to the gardens I tend. Not only do they offer a rainbow of colors and attract many pollinators of all kinds, many of these flowers are suitable for cutting and bringing indoors. Over the years, I have had such plants as bachelor buttons, larkspur, love in a mist, annual poppies, a salvia native to the southwest called Lady in Red that I really like, and so do hummingbirds, and calendula or pot marigold. They all reappear as volunteers. Now, these are not as problematic as weeds and easily may be thinned or transplanted elsewhere around the garden. Allowing these flowers to scatter seed late each fall lightens my spring seed sowing chores. I know Gail and I emphasize the importance of planting many natives, but no garden must have only native plants. Even Professor Doug Tallamy, who suggests that yards contain 75% native plants, especially trees and shrubs, says that there's room for favorite non-native ornamentals. The weather pattern this spring has not been conducive to yard work, as we all know, but it certainly has kept all things growing rapidly, including the weeds. However, the damp soil also means that the weeds pull out easily, root and all, if one takes the time to do so. I've been doing a good bit of hand-pulling of larger weeds, but I think I have mentioned before that my favorite weed-fighting tool is my stirrup hoe, also sometimes called a scuffle hoe. Depending on how well-drained your soil is, it's most effective to employ this tool a couple of days after a rain, when the sun and wind have had a chance to dry out the top inch or so of soil. That hasn't happened yet. A light going over with my scuffle hoe upends small weeds, exposing their roots to the sun and wind, where they will then die. The dust mulch formed by this loosened soil also prevents many other weeds from sprouting. You just must be sure not to hoe too deeply, which can bring other buried seeds up to the sweet spot where they have enough light and air to germinate. Well, let's turn our attention now to mulch. While it's generally beneficial to add some organic mulch at least every few years, I see many people adding it each spring. I choose not to use commercial mulch for several reasons. Many dyed mulch products may contain scraps of treated or manufactured lumber products that may contain contaminants or have binding agents and glue in them. The lumber may have been treated with various heavy metals like chromium and copper, used to make the mulch last longer. Some other possible contaminants are copper, aluminum, arsenic, lead, and formaldehyde. Besides being potentially dangerous to the plants, animals, and people who interact with the mulch, dyed mulches can damage the life in the soil. Healthy soil that will grow the best plants is a complex community of bacteria, fungi, insects, and worms. They help give it nutrients, structure, and the ability for proper water absorption. Commercial mulch also tends to pack down and form a crust, causing much of the rain or other water used simply to run off into the grass. If you have such mulch, rather than simply adding new mulch atop the old, use a garden rake, not a leaf rake, to rough up existing mulch in place. A little effort will save you money and be better for your plants. This spring, I'm using plain wood chips that resulted from a large tree we had to have taken down last fall. The contractor was happy to leave the shredded material on our property. In the past, I have gotten wood chips delivered for free from arborists who are happy to dispose of them, but you do need to have a place for them to dump a truckload. Before mulching, one should pull out, or at least cut as short as possible, any existing weeds or grass, and then cover the desired area by layering it with corrugated cardboard or paper. This biodegradable material will smother vegetation, but allow air and water into the soil. If you look underneath a biodegradable mulch that has been in place over a season, you will find that the plant material you have smothered is being attended to by a lively assortment of nature's cleanup crew. Sow bugs, also known as roly-polies or pill bugs, wood roaches, carpenter and other ants, beetles of various kinds, sometimes termites, as well as worms and countless bacteria, work hard at breaking down the dead material that then adds nutrients to the soil. While wood mulch does decay slowly, if you have first covered the area with some sort of non-organic, so-called weed barrier, such as landscape fabric or, heaven forbid, plastic, the decaying organic mulch you use will do little or nothing to enrich the soil beneath it with nutrients, and so will not benefit whatever plants grow there. In any case, freshly shredded wood needs adequate time to compost. Otherwise, as I have mentioned in previous segments, they can leach nitrogen from the soil as the microorganisms do their work of breaking down the wood. So paper and cardboard are preferable under mulch, since they do break down slowly and are a buffer until the wood is decayed somewhat. Then your mulch should decompose slowly, the nutrients being mixed into the soil by earthworms and other invertebrates, microbes, and all the various other soil organisms I mentioned whose task it is to break down such matter. I lay down both corrugated cardboard and 6 or 8 thicknesses of newspaper in various places onto the ground, and then wet it with water from my garden hose before adding aged wood chips, straw, or leaves. Of course, well-decomposed leaf compost that is weed-free may be purchased by the cubic yard from our local municipal composting facility. But it's getting more expensive each year, so usually I only use that to freshen the soil in my raised beds, adding a few inches of new compost atop the soil from the previous year. It gets mixed in as I plant. Weed seeds blow in on the wind or are dropped by birds, and so landscape fabric will not prevent weeds that arrive in this way from taking root in whatever organic material is spread on top of it. And when weeds root through that fabric, which they inevitably will do, it's extremely difficult, if not impossible, to remove them effectively, since the roots extend down through the tiny perforations in the fabric. Using landscape fabric under stones and gravel will help keep rocks from sinking into the soil, and makes stone removal much easier if you decide later to change things. However, you still will get weeds sprouting from seeds that land and take root in the debris that inevitably collects among the stones. With due diligence, one may remove weakly rooted weeds before they can really become established, and certainly this should be done before they bloom. However, by and large, it seems to be human nature to neglect them until the homeowner feels overwhelmed and often constrained by time and various commitments, and so reaches for an herbicide. Above all, never use plastic sheeting as the layer beneath your mulching material. Neither air nor water passes through plastic, and it ends up souring the soil. I was asked some years ago to install a flower bed where, years before, black plastic had been used in a futile attempt to prevent weeds. I first hand-pulled the noxious weeds like Canada thistle, chickweed, dandelions, and many more that had sprung up in the old layer of shredded bark mulch that had covered the plastic, and then, with great effort, I pulled up the plastic itself. The stench coming from the soil underneath was that of a swamp or a sewer due to the presence of anaerobic bacteria. Those are bacteria that only can thrive in a habitat with little or no oxygen. Finally, don't be in a hurry to mulch the vegetables. The soil is awfully wet right now, and besides needing to dry out a bit, further warming up will help keep things going now that they've had a good drink. Having the overnight temperature dropping back into the 40s, and even lower recently, is pretty discouraging and will make tomato plants as resentful as we gardeners are. Before I close, I want to give my annual warning about the dangerous invasive wild parsnip and poison hemlock that bloom out roadside. I was startled to notice yellow flower heads of parsnips already blooming on May 16th along a farmer's field just down the road from our house. And then just today, I see it is all along the railroad bed out 95 by Whirlpool. Do you keep a garden journal? I have found it very interesting to refer to mine from year to year what is happening in the yard and garden at any given week. And according to my records from my neighborhood, which is just outside Marion City, this is about 2 weeks earlier than I've seen wild parsnip in bloom before. I've also noted that purslane is appearing in sidewalk cracks and along the edges of my bookworm garden at the library, and the warming soil has caused the invasive and persistent nutgrass, or nutsedge, to appear there also. Nutsedge has slender grassy leaves, triangular stems, and small nut-like tubers on the roots, and have a faint but pleasing fragrance. I just cannot seem to get rid of it, but I keep pulling it. Each spring seems to bring its own unique challenge, but this also means opportunities for new lessons to be learned. Experienced gardeners adapt to different conditions, are flexible, and have patience. This is Carol Kelly saying, let's not despair, but rather look forward to all the wonderful things Mother Nature has to teach us this year in the green outdoors.
And there's your show for the week. In the Green Outdoors is a production of WZMO Radio. The show airs Saturdays and Mondays right after the second cup at about 9:30 a.m. If you have a question or comment for Carol or Gail, you can email it to WZMO@roadrunner.com. Thank you for listening.